Mama storms toward us. Her hands are crossed against her chest, and her freckly brown cheeks hold an angry color.
I've been calling out to you for close to an hour. Do you know what time it is?
The wind catches her scent and wraps it all around me. She's made fresh honey biscuits and brand new lavender soap for the inn's bathrooms. I gaze to the left at Sebastian. He looks terrified. I burst with laughter.
I don't think anything I just said is funny, Mama barks.
No, ma'am, I say, trying to stop the hiccuping laughs from bubbling up and out. This boy drowned, and I saved him.
She did,
he says, grinning at me. She clucks her tongue.
This is private property, you know. You aren't supposed to be out here, let alone swimming.
I'm really sorry,
he replies, ducking his head in the type of shame that appeases Mama.
Do your parents even know where you are? She says.
I suppose not, he admits.
They must be worried sick. You come on up to our inn and phone them, you hear?
She sweeps him forward.
And Viola, you've got double chores tonight. I need the salt bags brought in, and the rooms on the fourth floor need fresh linens. The dogs haven't been bathed or walked.
We pad through the sand, each step sinking us a little farther in.
Maybe I can help,
Sebastian offers, and I hope this means he might stick around for a little while, even if that means he might not be here forever. I've seen three versions of my future tonight. I know, deep down, that all will end in sadness for us. But for the first time, it doesn't scare me that my life could also include love.
By the look of you, boy, you couldn't lift a feather. When's the last time you ate?
I'm stronger than I look.
I smile. That he is.
Oomph by Emery Lord. Read by Betsy Struxness. I blame it on being the oldest child. I also blame it a little on my parents, who moved my family to the contained, drivable suburbs of Indianapolis. I definitely blame whatever genetics wired my dad to be an Olympics-qualifying worrier. Hi again, Dad, I say into the phone. My throat is relaxed, the pitch of my voice cheerful. I am the picture of not annoyed. I can hear you rolling your eyes, Cass. I throw one hand up in the air, though there's no one with me to acknowledge my exasperation. And that, my aloneness, is exactly why he has already texted me four times since I got in the cab. Once was to make sure I was going to JFK, not LaGuardia. Come on, Dad. New York is intimidating, but I do have basic capabilities. Cassidy, are you there? Deep breath. I'm a trained actress, but it takes a toll pretending I am fine for my parents when I am internally freaking out. Yes, Dad. I'm walking into JFK right now. I still have my driver's license and my boarding pass. Well, I just looked up your flight again, and it's delayed now. I know, but only an hour. I'm looking at the weather, honey, and I think you should expect more delays. It's been a sloppy April so far. Rain kicking up slush. For me, a pull-your-coat-tighter spring break in New York instead of the South Carolina beach trip some other seniors took. I know, Dad. I imagine his frown, lit by his tablet as he switches between the airline website and the weather app. My mom is almost certainly nearby, with an online crossword pulled up and maybe the anthropology website, cruising drapey sweaters in the sales section. I'm just saying, keep an eye out for changes, okay? And maybe eat a proper dinner since you're delayed now. I know airport food is expensive, but Dad, I'm getting into the security line. Okay, he says, I'll let you go. Will you? I wonder, and I can almost hear it. The distant clang of the next phase of my life hurtling down the tracks. It's coming. 6 months away. And that phase will carry me right back here for college. Supposedly. Bye, Dad, I say, quiet now. This was a trial run for them, letting me travel to New York alone. Last summer, we did a family road trip to Manhattan, all five of us crammed in a hotel room in Times Square. The second time, it was just me and my mom, for my audition. It all seemed terrifying and magical until about 3 days ago when I realized, sitting at a party in my best friend's dorm, that I have made a terrible mistake. Now it is simply terrifying. I spent the rest of my trip secretly Googling whether or not you can get deposit money back from a university. Ivy kept asking, "What's going on, Cass?" And I didn't even lie. I said, "Just thinking about next year." Then she'd loop her arm through mine and chatter excitedly about how we'll be in plays together, just like at home, only at NYU this time. I settle into the security line behind a tall girl with a long ponytail, as deep red as autumn leaves burning. And I am maybe staring a little bit because the TSA agent nearby startles me. "Take this," she says. I automatically accept a piece of red laminated paper. Again, I blame the oldest child thing. I tend to follow rules. "Okay. What is it?" "Just give it to the agent who takes your boarding pass." She walks away before I can ask for clarification. Heat snakes up my spine. It has the TSA logo printed at the top and the current time written in dry erase marker on one of the lines. Did I get randomly chosen for extra screening? My heart thuds like a timpani. See? I'm panicking. I'm not equipped for life in New York City. I am not equipped for life, period. Who let me apply for college in the biggest city in America? No one else is holding a red paper. Not the guy behind me, a man in a navy suit playing a game on his phone. Not the redhead in front of me. Everything about her, the olive green duffel bag, her fleece jacket, her tall boots, makes her look like an advertisement for REI. Or like someone who rides horses. She glances back, perhaps feeling my laser beam attention. "Busted," the girl says, smiling. She nods toward my paper. "Sorry?" I ask, even though I heard her. I need a moment to collect myself. These outdoorsy girls intimidate me. They always have very clear skin. "I mean, you're literally holding a red flag. They red flagged you." She leans in, stage whispering with a smile. "What kind of intrigue are you part of?" "Oh, nothing, really." I try to say this in a bored voice. This is my instinct, to switch into a character when nervous. "It's just procedure for those of us in the CIA. We work in conjunction with TSA. God, why do I have to be so weird? Why couldn't I have just said in a sultry voice, "I'll never tell"? The girl gives me a businesslike nod, thin-lipped. "Huh. Interesting. They don't make us jump through hoops like that at the FBI. We smile at each other, and it's the strangest thing. Our mouths curling up in such synchronicity that they seem linked, pleased with our little joke at the precise same time. My hand lifts into a wave. "I'm Margaret, by the way. Margaret Carter. You can call me Peggy." She laughs, a single ha that rings out in surprise. "Oh, sure. I've heard of you, agent. Thought you'd have a British accent. I'm Natasha." It takes me a second, but the red hair clues me in. "Romanoff, right? Black Widow? Working with the FBI, huh?" "That's classified." She pretends to flip her ponytail back. "Next in line," a TSA agent calls. The girl steps forward, smiling back at me as a farewell. And I already know. I will replay this short exchange the whole way home, every frame of it. The way she tilted her head toward me, conspiratorial. The mischievous grin. It wasn't really anything, I know that. But sometimes I get glimpses that it might be possible for me. That someday, I'll find someone who gets my sense of humor without a single confused look. Someone who is so beautiful that my hands feel twitchy. When I step up to the podium, I hold out the mystery paper. The agent accepts it without a reaction. "I was supposed to give that to you." "Thanks," she says, taking my ID. I scan my boarding pass, relieved that it beeps right away. "What was it?" "Oh," she says, "just us gathering data about how long it took you to get through the line. Have a good flight." When I glance over to the other line, the girl has her boots off. I'm relieved to see that she's wearing mismatched socks. They're not woolen hiking socks, either. One has a pattern made of pizza slices. She turns over her shoulder, perhaps feeling my scrutiny again. But she only smiles, as if we're both in on a secret. Once I'm through the scanner, I look for her once more. She's in full Vitruvian Man, arms and legs wide as a TSA officer pats her down. Busted, I mouth at her. She grins, pressing her wrists together to mime being handcuffed. The agent notices, frowning, and the girl's smile drops. She attempts a solemn look, and I can't help but laugh. Bye, pretty woodsy girl, I think, wistful. I grip it, this feeling, so tightly that my fingers ache. It's like trying to hold smoke. But that's that, or so I think, as I pick up some snacks and decide on a seat at my near-empty gate. I'm settling my headphones into my ears when I hear it. Oh my gosh, Margaret? Margaret Carter? It's not the name, but the loudness of her voice that gets my attention. Sure enough, the girl from the security line is at the gate across from mine, going to, per the lit-up sign behind her, Denver. There's an older man beside her, watching as she waves to me, and the girl is giving me a meaningful, wide-eyed, help me look. Hey, Natasha! I call, looking surprised. It's a neutral enough response. She's gathering her things, moving, I think, to come sit by me. Yep, she's hauling her stuff over, but with a look on her face that I can't read. Definitely trying to communicate something with gritted teeth. You are my savior, she whispers, sitting down beside me. That guy smells like whiskey and wanted to tell me all about how nervous he gets to fly. Get out of town, I say loudly with a practiced stage laugh, hoping the drunk guy can hear me, trying to sell that we know each other. I should have known we'd run into each other here. Thank you. She relaxes into her seat, not facing forward but angled toward me. So, I say, they didn't make you go to airport jail? Oh, please, the joint could never hold me, she glances around. So, Margaret, who are you here investigating? She elbows me gently, nodding stage left toward a chic woman in a trench, hair blown out into shiny curls. Please, too obvious, the real villain is the little one. That small child with the unicorn backpack? I nod solemnly. Master of disguise. We guess at what the middle-aged married couple is bickering about. We speculate that two pilots wheeling luggage past us are sleeping together. We debate the relationship between an older man and a beautiful younger woman. Colleagues? May-December romance? Curmudgeonly old spy training the new generation of beautiful badass spies, I suggest. Agreed, you're good at this. I should hope so, after nearly 4 years at the Indianapolis School for the Performing Arts. You are, too. She offers up a style of shrug I wish I could perfect. Dismissive, but elegant. Art nerd. Before I can ask what she means, she gestures to the crowd we've been watching. It's like trying to figure out a painting. Maybe you have a little context, the year it was painted, or maybe you've seen the artist's other work before. But you're largely inferring. It's just paying attention to detail and an educated guess. Why this angle? What was going on in the artist's life? Sometimes, I think, knowing that for sure takes the fun out of it. I like to speculate. I don't like to speculate about anything. I like call times. I like a nice, set tempo and a musical number. But before I ask more, she leans away, examining me. Okay, I'm going to do you. My heart swells like a balloon, just moments before a pop. It takes me an embarrassingly long time to realize that she means she's going to guess what I'm doing here in the airport. Am I misreading her? Her body language is so comfortable and open. She elbowed me before, like we're old pals who touch all the time. And she brought up Natasha Romanoff. I mean... I take a deep breath, trying to keep my cheeks from turning pink. The girl squints at me, and I realize I have had 17 years to become a cooler person. What have I been doing all this time? According to Ivy, I dressed like a movie star playing a 1950s professor. I guess that's her way of summarizing that I like blazers and slim-fitting pants, but also lipstick. Sometimes I add a silk scarf, and I don't really care what's trendy or not. After you've seen enough Katharine Hepburn movies, whatever is currently in fashion just seems fleeting. It doesn't help that I keep my regular brown hair at my shoulders so it can be styled easily for whatever show I'm in. I could have at least gotten some shaggy French girl bangs on the off chance a pretty girl would someday be scrutinizing my appearance for clues. "You are coming home from," she pauses, still considering, "a national convention of Model UN, where you represented Ireland. Small but complex. Lots of history." My laugh, which was supposed to be light and airy, sounds like a distressed bird. "Nope. Wrong? Okay. You were doing a college interview at Columbia, where you plan to major in," she taps her fingers against her lips, "materials engineering." "Closer." I glance down at my outfit. "Materials engineering. Interesting." "The thought process had to do with your lipstick," she says, gesturing at her own mouth. "I was thinking, okay, you also look like a fairly precise person. I can see you revolutionizing makeup packaging, making it recyclable, eco-friendly, but still sophisticated." "Spring break," I confess. "I was visiting my best friend at school where I'm supposed to be next year." "I'm a senior too," she says, excited. "You're going to Columbia?" "NYU, Tish." "An actrice," she says it in an easy French accent, the R sound from the back of her throat. "Huh. You don't seem like the type."
"No?"
"Well, you don't seem like a ham, you know? Always breaking into song at a party, not realizing it makes everyone uncomfortable." I laugh, loudly, because I go to a performing arts school. I know those types. I am surrounded by those types. I am best friends with that type. "I just like taking on other mannerisms, other identities, studying how to be someone else."
"Huh. When did you get into it?"
"I guess I was 11. "Just tell her, Cass. What's the worst thing that happens?"
She's like, "I'm out of here."
I mean, she's out of here, by necessity, in half an hour anyway. But before I can speak, the girl glances down at her phone. "Sorry, hold on one sec."
"Hi, Mom."
"Yeah. I'm on time."
"Okay."
She's placating her mom, just as I did my dad, and I know I missed my window. What I would have told her is that I started summer theater camp in elementary school, and I loved it. Loved the boxes full of costumes, loved the total commitment to roaring like a lion or standing totally still as a tree. I liked memorizing lines, knowing what I was supposed to say and when. But I knew I was good at it in sixth grade. Annabelle Warren's birthday slumber party, to be exact, when we all had to go around and say who our celebrity crush was and why. And I sat there in my pink striped pajamas acting my ass off. I said, "Kellen James, boy wonder of our favorite tween show." The key to my performance was seeming embarrassed to admit it. I stumbled on my words. I said, "like," a lot. I glanced at the carpet. "I don't know," I said, breathily, unable to make eye contact with the other girls. "He just seems like, I don't know, the kind of boyfriend who would, like, be really nice to your younger sister, you know? I mean, he did really seem like that. I think I actually willed my cheeks to flush. Meryl Streep honestly has nothing on an 11-year-old who feels very cozy in the closet. Back then, I didn't have the right words for the way I felt anyway. They bought it completely. And it didn't really feel like lying. I felt powerful and safe, taking on the identity of a girl I simply wasn't. For years, if Kellen came up, Annabelle would waggle her eyebrows at me. She once got me a birthday card with his face on it, which she labeled "Future Husband." I came out to her freshman year, and she said so earnestly,
But there was that whole Kellen James thing. Oh, Annabelle. Sweet, innocent Annabelle. In the end, it was still an inside joke between us, just for a different reason. Sorry about that, the girl says, setting down her phone. She positions herself back toward me. I notice that. Of course I do. I swear, I've been traveling alone for a decade, and she still frets. Okay, your turn to guess mine. Your reason for being in New York? Mm-hmm. I don't have to guess, I say, because I know. L.L. Bean catalog photo shoot. Oh, my God. She covers her face, laughing, but I think she's pleased. Ha, yeah, right. Am I right, or am I right? This outfit isn't L.L. Bean, just Denver wear. And I'm definitely not a model, she says, motioning as if presenting herself. I am but a child of divorce, 1 weekend a month with my dad in the city. That's pretty cool, right? Like a New York vacation 12 times a year? Yeah, I like it now. Because when he's busy, which is a lot, I can just go to museums and the park and the theater. I'm not there enough to make actual friends, though, so I'm just a weird loner art girl. But that's okay. I'll be at Columbia next year. We talk about friends from home, about summer plans. For me, working as many hours as I can get waiting tables. For her, unofficial nanny for her younger half-siblings. At one point, I make her laugh so hard that she tips her head back. It can be so freaking hard to tell if a girl is into you or if she thinks she just found a new best friend. I mean, sure, I do have some sense of it, but I've been wrong before. Like, a lifetime of crushes on girls who later announce their straightness. Some of the time I want to side-eye them, like, you sure about that? But hey, whatever. My mom says it'll be easier in college, that not everyone knows themselves as well as I do just yet. That not everyone feels safe or comfortable enough to come out in high school. And I get that. I do live in Indiana, where I have to be careful, too. But sometimes it seems so unfair that I have to wait. Plenty of girls get their love stories starting now, starting years ago. Sometimes I even envy their heartbreak. At least they got to know what it was like, right? What I get, apparently, is a first date with a girl I met online, who barely spoke to me at the carnival where we met up. On our second date, we agreed that we just didn't click. We did make out in my car, though. That's my romance portfolio. Hey, the girl says. We never exchanged real names, and now it's too awkward to throw that into the conversation. Before, you said you were visiting your best friend at Tisch, where you're supposed to be next year. But you won't be? Everything feels so much safer in costume, with adopted mannerisms. So why, sitting here with her, do I want to empty my pockets and show her everything I own? Every flaw, every quirk, the dull coins and gum wrappers, every trivial and unglamorous part of who I am. Tisch was always the plan. I got in, we sent the deposit and everything. But now I think it's a huge mistake. The girl tips her head forward just a bit, silently asking for more information. Ivy's acting school friends, they're all, I don't know, smart and talented and beautiful. Why did I think I could go there and compete with that? The girl says, giving me a pointed look. Because you're also smart and talented and beautiful? I stare down at my knees, puffing out laugh air. Yeah, right. Excuse me, she scoffs. You just told me that I'm good at reading people. I guess I thought I was getting the leads in every play and musical because I'm good. But maybe I'm just a big fish in a small pond. What if I'm not any good, and I'm just driving myself into debt for a career that, like, basically no one gets to have in the long run? I mean, my parents don't have a lot of money, so this is on me. And God, like, just navigating the city, it's so much. Figuring out the subway and trying not to get lost on the streets, and I trail off, helpless. You know what, though? She's squinting, her gaze somewhere in the crowd. For the first issue, at least, I think all of us seniors think that. This time, it's me who cocks my head, wondering if she's right.
I mean, even if we feel sure about what we want to do, what if we're wrong? What if it sucks? What if we're not good at it? What if we are, but we still can't get a solid career down the road? It's all unknowns. Okay, then what the heck are we supposed to do? She scans the people around us, as if searching in them for an answer. I think all we can really do is chase the oomph. I lean forward, thinking I've misheard. The oomph? Man, she's pretty. Pale lashes fluttering as she thinks. Yeah, that thing you feel when you're right where you're supposed to be. That steeled feeling. Standing in the wings before my first entrance, drawing my shoulders back, spotlight on me as the opening notes of my solo sound from the orchestra pit. Total assurance. Joy, even, that I can do it. Standing at the piano beside my co-lead in rehearsals, working through tricky interlocking harmonies. The moments when I can work myself up to impassioned tears. See? She says, pleased. You know what I'm talking about. Wouldn't you do just about anything to chase that feeling? Wouldn't you keep auditioning even though the girls competing for your roles are going to make you work harder for it? That is, I say, swallowing, an excellent point. Someone gets on the intercom at my gate to announce that the plane is still en route. I sigh, rolling my eyes. With my luck, I'll be sleeping here. Well, then, Natasha says, rubbing her hands together. She wears a thin ring on her pointer finger, gold with a tiny peridot stone that matches her eyes. I want to know what it means to her. Is it her birthstone? A gift? Just something pretty she stumbled across? I'd better teach you to airport camp before I board. Airport camp? Yeah, she says. I invented it when I was 12. Stay here. After I've watched her walk away, I glance at my phone. 2 missed calls from my dad and a text that says, I'm worried. No kidding, Dad. That is your resting state of being. I'm typing out a response when my mom calls, a dorky selfie of us popping up with her contact info. Hey, Mom. Hey, sweetie. Thought I'd check in. Your dad figures he might be driving you nuts. She's probably at the kitchen island, keeping my brother and sister from bickering as they work on homework. Only a little. I'm fine. Just sitting here at the gate. Still delayed. Oh, poor thing. Delays are no fun, but even worse when you're alone. Is Wi-Fi free? At least watch a movie or something? It's all right, actually. I made a friend. There's a heavy silence across the line as she apparently deliberates. No, she decides. Nope, I don't like you talking to strangers. This is how people get murdered in airport bathrooms and stuffed into trash cans. What? You made that up, and she's harmless, I swear. Wait, she says, breathy all of a sudden. Is it a girl? Even hundreds of miles away, I can sense her grin, smug as can be. I'm quiet for too long, incriminating myself. It is, isn't it? I've gotta go, Mom. You do not. You're literally trapped in an airport with nothing to do. Is she pretty? I hold the phone away from my ears so I can't hear her. Bye, Mom. Love you. With my remaining alone time, I consider my options. Text Ivy that I met a girl? No, can't do it. What if she texts me back after said girl returns and girl sees it? Or what if Ivy asks something basic like, say, the girl's name? I could Google, how can I tell if a girl is flirting with me? I know from experience that it is not helpful at all. So, I check my flight one more time, touch up my makeup, and try to convince myself that the girl is actually coming back. Which she does, eventually. A purposeful walk, even with her hands full. She's carrying a Starbucks cup, a Rice Krispies treat in plastic wrap, and chocolate-covered grams. I don't get it, I admit. You will. Using the empty seat next to her as a flat surface, she cuts the Rice Krispies treat into smaller cubes, then spears one with a wooden coffee stirrer. Okay, she says. So, if you wind up having to stay overnight, you find an empty gate. She removes the lid from the cup, revealing what appears to be plain hot water. Steam floods upward. Maybe not the sleeves of two sweaters together. Drape them over the armrests of these chairs. Definitely pull up a YouTube video of a crackling fire on your laptop, and then... She holds the Rice Krispies treat kebab over the steam. I give her a puzzled look, but it hits me quick. Oh my God, I say, laughing. When her makeshift marshmallow is gooey enough, she presses it onto a chocolate graham. Et voila, she says, handing it to me. Airport s'more. When I take it, she licks melted chocolate off the pad of her finger. I almost cough up the bite I'm trying to chew. Instead, I look away, humming thoughtfully. This is impressive. She gives that same self-possessed shrug. I'm an impressive person. Across from us, her gate's intercom announces boarding. The line forms in a rush, which I've never understood. Why sit in that tiny airplane seat any longer than you have to? Well, I better get over there, she says, jabbing a thumb at the gate. You're lucky. I live here now. I try not to betray that I feel split down the center, realizing I'll never see her again. I might hang on to the wooden stirrer slash marshmallow skewer to remind myself it was real. Hey, if that drunk guy talks to you again, tell a flight attendant, okay? Seriously? I will, she says, solemn. Nice to meet you, Carter. I'll tell the Home Office you're as talented as they say. Back at you, Romanoff. She hefts her duffel bag over her shoulder, gives me a half-smile before she turns to go. It settles in. That feeling of total certainty that I will regret what I am doing. Nothing. Even while I have a chance to correct it. I settle back into my seat, knowing I will wonder forever. That I'll recount every moment to my friends, that they'll scream, "Why didn't you ask for her number?" I won't have an answer. Something I have longed for was right there, an arm's reach away. Why couldn't I just lift my hand? Too afraid that I'd have it slapped away, I guess. Maybe it was enough for it to just exist here and now. Or maybe that's an excuse I use to avoid putting myself out there. Maybe I'm just hiding behind the guise of a strong woman character whose lines I've memorized without ever making my own bold choices. I tear through my purse for a pen and paper. I've got to do it, right? She started the conversation in line. She flagged me down. Have I given her anything concrete in return? Natasha, hey, I say, breathless from hurrying. She looks up from her phone. The people nearest to her in line are pretending not to eavesdrop. Joanna, actually, she says. Is it my imagination? Does she look relieved? Joe. I'm Cassidy. She nods, as if she knew this. Like she'd known me in another life and just couldn't quite remember what name I'd gone by in those years. My number, I say, holding out a carbon-smeared receipt. In case you want to show a New York newbie around the museums next year. Have a laugh at how dense I am about art. She looks pleased. It has always been my dream to just be weird art girl instead of weird loner art girl. Happy to help. Okay, see you. I say it breezily, acting, again, just a little, trying to be a more confident girl. Bye, Cass, she says. The smile stays put. Back at my own gate, I grin like a fool. But I'm not a fool. I know this girl might never text me. Or, if she does, it'll be as friends, and that's okay. She's disappeared into the tunnel toward her plane. But I still get to keep it. The fact that a pretty stranger patched up my relationship with NYU, like some angel of college plans. That she made my heart feel full of glitter, if only for half an hour. That I got to feel seen. I'm so lost in it that the buzz of my phone startles me. A number I don't know. Hey, it's Joe. You're not going to believe this, she says, and I like that. I like that she thinks she knows what I would and wouldn't believe. I put my music on shuffle when I sat down, and this is the first song that came up. A screenshot of a song called Pretty Girl at the Airport. One beat. Just enough for a sharp inhale. And there it is, deep
in my chest. Oomph.
The Dictionary of You and Me by Jennifer L. Armentrout. Read by Caitlin Davies. Cheeks flushed and stinging from the whipping winds barreling through the near-empty parking lot, I hurried toward the small two-story county library I'd worked at 3 days a week for the past 2.5 years. The wind was picking up loose strands of my black hair, tossing them across my face as if it were attempting to blind me. That's what I got for not wearing a hat or taking the time to pull my hair up. Winter had come early this year to Waverly Hollow, turning the small, barely there town into the North Pole since the day after Thanksgiving. Now that Christmas was in a week, there was a high likelihood that we'd have a dusting of the white fluffy stuff come Christmas morning. A white Christmas, I thought happily. I was a big old dork when it came to Christmas. I loved everything about it. The twinkly lights and crinkling paper, the smell of pine and balsam, the music and the movies, and most, I loved all the hope. As soon as I pushed open the main lobby door, the musty scent of books hit me. I tugged off my thick mittens with a smile. I loved that smell. I guessed it was a good thing that I did, since I planned to study library science when I entered college next fall. The library was dead, but that was no surprise. It was a Wednesday night, and we tended only to be busy on the weekends. I crossed the main floor, passing the reference section that saw about the same amount of action as I did. Boyfriendless since the end of last summer, I was officially giving up on the whole dating thing. Not that anyone would blame me, since my last date ended with my fist connecting with Jared Richmond's nose. Shoving my gloves into the pocket of my coat, I walked behind the front desk, and like I did every time I showed up for work, I headed for the return cart. Mrs. Singer, the head librarian in charge, always left the return cart for me to handle. Not that I minded. She took care of everything else, so there wasn't much for me to do in the evenings that I worked. But there was one book in particular that I was searching for. I bent over and started rooting through the books I'd have to put away later. It didn't take long for me to realize that the way overdue book hadn't been returned. The corners of my lips tipped up again. I straightened as I pulled off the scarf, unsure if the tiny smidgen of relief I felt was absurd. Actually, I knew the answer to that. It was the epitome of ludicrous. Shaking my head, I went over to the front desk as Mrs. Singer strolled out of the small office, her steel-gray hair smooth and sleek. I slid my backpack off and placed it under the desk. Mrs. Singer was already bundled up, wearing a puffy black jacket and a pale white scarf. Her sparkly purse dangled from her gloved fingers. "Good evening, Miss Evans." Before I could open my mouth to respond, Mrs. Singer turned on her heel. Cold air rushed into the library as the door swung shut behind her. And that was it. Off she went, home to her husband of a billion years. Mrs. Singer wasn't much of a talker. Scanning the stacks and tables, I spotted two patrons, one by the computers, and the other sitting near a window reading. I tucked a strand of hair behind my ear as I grabbed the clear plastic holder that contained a dozen or so index cards. Our systems were pretty archaic, due to lack of funding and the fact that our town was still stuck in the 50s. I mean, we had one high school that served the entire county. So our library was like the little library that could. These cards were linked to library accounts that had overdue books on them. Normally, we'd shoot emails to the offenders. We rarely ever called them. Except for Mr. H. Smith. Getting the way overdue book back from him had become a personal mission of mine. I'd call him at least once, sometimes twice a week, and he always answered. And he always had some completely out there excuse for why he hadn't returned the dictionary he checked out 4 months ago. Yes, a dictionary. I was pretty sure he was the only person to check out a dictionary since the internet was invented. Pulling out his card, I tapped it off the counter as I picked up the phone and wedged it between my cheek and shoulder. The phone rang once, then twice.
Hello?
The familiar male voice answered. For some dumb reason, my heart belly flopped in my chest, which was weird, because this was just about getting a book back. But... Hi, this is...
Moss, he answered. You don't give up, do you?
I grew up hating my name, and the fact that my parents had been hippies who had to have smoked a ton of pot before they came up with it. I mean, my name was Moss.
Moss?
Like, come on. Moss wasn't a name. It was a plant that grew in dank, dark areas. But the way H. Smith said it, I felt my cheeks warm. He said my name like he was whispering some kind of prized secret. He sounded close to my age. Of course, I knew that didn't really mean anything. I had no idea if this guy was some kind of perv living in his mother's basement, harassing women online while eating double-stuffed Oreos and getting crumbs all over his keyboard. But somehow I knew he wasn't.
I've missed you,
he said, surprising me. Even without a mirror, I knew my pink skin was getting even pinker. Clearing my throat, I focused on the task at hand. There is no way you could have missed me.
And why not?
He replied, sounding amused. We don't even know each other.
I don't think that's true. I mean, at least I feel like I know you.
There was a pause.
Just the other day,
you told me you hated turkey. I had told him that, though I couldn't remember how that topic of convo had come up. Yeah, and just the other day, you told me the reason you'd been unable to return the dictionary was because you were touring the back roads of France. He chuckled.
That's not a lie.
Oh, really?
I've been checking them out on Google Maps.
My lips twitched. And what about the time you told me you haven't been able to make it to the library because you're preparing for an alien invasion?
Well, I have been playing Halo in my spare time, so it's not like that's a lie, he answered smoothly. And you know me. You know my deepest, darkest secret.
I really don't think I know that.
Yes, you do.
His tone was light,
playful even. You know that I like to write. I know that you like that I write.
He caught me so off guard that I heard myself stutter out, of course I like that. I do work at a library.
Mm-hmm, he murmured. And you also know that I just started marathoning Game of Thrones.
I glanced up from the phone. The few people in the library were still busy doing their thing. That's only because you used that as an excuse for not returning the book. You said you were too emotionally wrecked after the Red Wedding scene.
I was, he exclaimed. That was a traumatic episode. I mean, I blinked and half the cast was gone. Just gone.
I was grinning so hard, I was sure there was a good chance he could see it through the phone.
And I know you cry when those ASPCA commercials come on, he continued.
Everyone cries when those commercials come on, I defended myself. And the only reason you know that about me is because the last time I called, I could hear that song playing in the background. And I didn't start crying. I just said they made me cry. Truth was, H. Smith was a stranger, but not. From the weekly calls over the last several months, little bits of information about both of us had surfaced. Nothing too deep. He knew I didn't like soda and preferred hot tea. He claimed to drink almost nothing but water and orange juice. We both were animal people. I heard him talk to a dog once, Daisy. Those were the kind of things we knew about each other. And we'd never met.
Anyway, he drew the word out. Have you heard of xenophobia?
Fighting a grin, I dropped onto the worn stool behind the front desk. He did this every time. Found random words in the dictionary and told me about them. The guy was, I don't know, he was just interesting. No, I have no idea what that is.
It's the irrational fear of jealousy. He paused. I'm not sure what makes the fear irrational, but a xenophobe seems like my kind of person.
Agreed, I murmured, glancing around at the library.
Did you know Zazzy was a real word?
It is.
According to the dictionary I plan on returning, it means flashy and stylish. Can you use Zazzy in a sentence?
I laughed under my breath. My winter jacket is Zazzy.
I'm sure it is, he said, and it sounded like a door shut somewhere on his side of the phone. Do you know what a Zocor is?
No, but I'm guessing you're going to tell me.
That I am, he returned. It's a mole-like rodent that actually looks really fluffy and friendly.
I wrinkled my nose, creasing the skin around my eyes. I don't know if there are any rodents that are friendly-looking.
What about Mickey Mouse?
Mickey Mouse is a cartoon.
No shit.
Another laugh escaped me. Shocker, I know.
Well, this conversation is full of zanyism.
Oh my god, I said, shaking my head. Does anyone even use the word zanyism in everyday language? He laughed, and it was a nice laugh. Deep. Infectious. He sounded like someone who laughed a lot, and I didn't picture trolls in their mother's basements as people who laughed a lot.
They should. They'd sound smarter.
Maybe.
You know what the most interesting word I found is? I know you're dying to know, so I won't draw it out for you, he said, and I bit down on my lip. It's Zapata. It means drooping, flowing, mustache.
What?
I laughed. Yep. So I got curious, because who wouldn't be?
Yeah, who wouldn't be? I said, switching the phone to my other shoulder.
It's actually named after the leader of the Mexican Revolution, Emiliano Zapata, he explained. See? You learn something new every day.
Or at least whenever I talk to you.
You probably don't want me to tell you what ZACH stands for.
Probably not.
Just think about how less wordy you'd be if I returned this dictionary on time, he said, this time with an amused chuckle.
I'm a better person now, I said dryly. There was another pause.
So, Moss, I was thinking.
After a few seconds, I gave up on waiting. Thinking what? You're going to finally return the dictionary? There was another rumble of laughter.
Maybe. Just maybe. I felt that swelling in my chest again.
Footsteps drew my attention, and I peered up. Someone was shuffling to the desk with an armful of books to check out. I straightened. It's been nice chatting with you, Mr. Smith, but it's time to return the dictionary. Our set looks pretty sad without it. Have a good night, I added, hanging up quickly. Standing, I pushed the call out of my head and took care of the guy checking out 5 books on herbology and hydroponics. Really wasn't going to question that too closely. Then I tackled the books that had been returned, the mind-numbing task keeping me busy most of the evening. Later, before I closed up the library, I googled Zocor, and I had to admit that the brown mole-like rodents did look fluffy and friendly.
I don't know why they made us come to school today, Libby sighed as she leaned against the locker beside mine.
Her curly black hair was pulled into a tight poof at the top of her head.
It's a half day, and not even the teachers want to be here.
Smothering a yawn, I stared bleakly at the books in my locker. I wonder if they'll care if I nap through first period.
Did you stay up watching Untold Stories of the ER again? She asked.
I shot her a grin. I can't help it. The show is fascinating. Libby shook her head.
You're so weird.
You love me, I told her as I grabbed my English book. Libby and I had been best friends since grade school. When are you leaving for your grandparents?
Christmas Eve, Eve, she answered with a roll of her light green eyes.
Sigh. No internet. No cable. The townsfolk are the kind that look at my mom and dad strangely.
You know, in that way, she said.
Libby was biracial, her mother black, and her father white.
God be with me.
I cringed in sympathy. How long will you be there?
Until New Year's Eve, she moaned, running her hand along the strap of her bag.
You're going to be home, right? Nodding, I pulled out a thin, couple-inch-wide notebook I used for doodling. I wasn't very talented outside of drawing flowers, and I could totally draw a blobfish. Real talent right there. There was just something relaxing about sketching, though. My grandparents are coming to our house. Lucky you. Oh, did you manage to get that book returned? She asked as I closed the locker door. I laughed and swung my backpack around, shoving the notebook into it. Libby was well aware of my ongoing mission at the library. No such luck. I think you may as well just give up. God, he is so pretty. Frowning, I followed her gaze and saw her grinning as she stared in the opposite direction. I shifted and immediately knew whom she was talking about. Quiet, hot guy. That was the official name Libby had given him when he showed up at the start of the school year. He was new, and that alone had been breaking news. But add in the fact that he was seriously cute and also seriously quiet, everyone had paid attention. Tyler Cox. I never exchanged a single word with him. He was in my history class, but he sat in the front while I sort of hid out in the back. I didn't see him at lunch, and since we didn't have that large of a cafeteria, I figured he must hang out in the library like some did. He was a bit of a mystery. A very cute mystery. Why does he have to have better lashes than us? Libby whispered. It's not fair. My lips curved up as I swallowed a giggle. He really did have amazing lashes. He stopped at his locker. I tried to pretend like I wasn't gawking, but he was really, really nice to look at. So, like the creepers we were, Libby and I watched him swirl the lock on the metal door. Tyler had a messy shock of hair that was a wild array of auburn and deep brown. It fell forward, brushing his eyebrows. With pale skin that looked like he'd be prone to blushing, those high cheekbones and the cut jaw, he really was more than just cute. The guy was a hottie. Andy was tall, with the kind of shoulders my grandma would call doorbusters. Grandma was also kind of weird. He started to turn toward us, so I pivoted around, widening my eyes at Libby as my bag thumped off my side. I really need to stop staring at people, she laughed. There are a lot of things you need to stop. Like what? I demanded. As if I need to tell you. Eyes glimmering, she grinned as she stepped back. See you in English. Wiggling my fingers at her, I lifted my bag up and headed in the opposite direction. I fell into the pack of shuffling bodies, folding my arms across my chest. I dreaded the climb to the second floor. It was too early, and I was entirely too lazy. Excuse me, a voice called out from behind me. Wheeling around, I came to a complete stop. Tyler stood a few feet from me, seemingly unaware of everyone passing around and between us. Hi, I squeaked like a chew toy. Why was he talking to me? We'd never talked before. Probably saw me staring at him like some... You dropped this. My brows rose as I stared. Goodness. Up close, those lashes were truly amazing. They lowered now, shielding eyes. I wasn't sure of the color. One side of his lips quirked up. You dropped this, he repeated, and then lifted his hand, holding the small notebook that now struck me as impossibly uncool. Thought you might want it back. It's pretty jazzy-looking. Did you just say zazzy? I asked, every part of me stilling. Who would use a word like zazzy except... He looked at me like I was an idiot. I said jazzy. Stupid joke. Anyway, here's your notebook. He handed it to me and walked away. I was still staring. The warning bell rang, tossing me out of my stupor. Thank you, I called after him. I stood there for a few seconds, sort of wanting to punch myself. I could talk to some strange, and I mean strange, dude on a phone for 4 months, but I couldn't say a complete sentence to the one standing in front of me? Ugh. I was a mess. A typical walking cliche mess. Jingle bells played softly from the computer behind the front counter, breaking the cardinal library rule. But it was the eve of Christmas Eve, and I didn't think the few people in the library would mind. One guy was softly snoring by the window, so he didn't get a choice. Perched on the edge of my seat, I was shading in a giant poinsettia with a red coloring pencil I'd stolen from my younger brother. I glanced at the front doors to see if it had started snowing again, like the forecast had called for. The sun was just setting, casting what I could see of the parking lot into long, cloudy shadows. Hoping it didn't snow buckets, I went back to the poinsettia. Silent Night replaced Jingle Bells, replaced Blue Christmas. I had no idea how much time had passed until I heard footsteps approaching me. My gaze flicked up, and I almost fell out of my seat. It was him. Quiet, hot guy. Tyler. I'd never, ever seen him in here before. Granted, I didn't work here every day, but still. "Hey," I said, surprise causing my tone to pitch high. "Tyler." A lopsided grin formed as thick lashes lowered. "You know my name?" Heat blasted my cheeks. Was I not supposed to know his name? Did knowing his name make me seem creepy? I kind of felt creepy now. "Well, yes. I mean, it's kind of hard not to. Not that I mean anything by that. I mean, this is a small town, and you're new. Well, new-ish. And in small towns like this, everyone knows everyone, even if they don't know that people know them." One brow lifted as Tyler studied me. Oh, God, I needed to shut up, but I couldn't seem to stop my mouth. "Everyone knows your name." Okay, now I did sound creepy. "I'm sorry," I said, feeling the centers of my cheeks warm. "I'm just really random today." "It's okay." One hand curled around the strap of his bag. I leaned forward. There was something familiar about his voice. I wasn't sure I could chalk it up to hearing him speak in class or the hallways. There was something else, like it was on the tip of my tongue or a thought existing on the fringe. The grin grew on those well-formed lips, warming brown eyes. Dark brown eyes. And I was totally just sitting there, staring at him like a dork. I cleared my throat. "So what can I help you with, Tyler?" "Actually, I think I can help you." He slid off his backpack and knelt down to unzip his bag. "It's something I think you've been waiting for." Curious, I watched him reach into his bag and pull something thick out of it. He laid it down on the lip of the counter, and my mouth dropped so far open I was sure I'd catch flies. Just like my grandma would say. A burgundy and gold dictionary rested in front of me. Not just any old dictionary. It was the missing one. The one checked out by H. Smith. I dropped the red pencil. It clattered off the desk and dropped to the floor. Slowly, I lifted my gaze from the heavy tome to Tyler's chocolate-colored eyes. I don't understand. Tyler was still grinning as he folded his arms on the counter. "I used to live in North Carolina, but my mom met someone at this conference for work. Anyway, after about a year of dating and doing the long-distance thing, they married." "Okay," I murmured. He tilted his head to the side. "So I ended up moving here over the summer. My stepfather's name is Harvey Smith." "Harvey Smith. H. Smith." My lips parted on a soft inhale. "Oh, my God." "I haven't gotten my own library card," he continued, as he glanced down at the dictionary. "So I've been using his, which is linked to his home phone." "Home phone?" I repeated dumbly. "I know, right? Can you believe he still has a house phone?" He chuckled, and I knew that chuckle. I'd heard it over the phone more than a dozen times. Scared the crap out of me the first time it rang. Couldn't figure out where it was coming from. I couldn't speak.